Chapter 11. Results of Contact and Receptivity. I am not indicating in any way how an individual can become telepathic. All those developments within the area or region of progressive contacts are only useful and truly available when they are developed normally and naturally and are not the result of premature unfoldment. When the development is premature, there is always the danger of wrong, erroneous, and self-centered interpretations. The telepathic information can be of purely selfish or personal import, and that type of telepathy has no place in what I am seeking to impart. People today frequently evidence a telepathic tendency or capacity. They tune in, a phrase they regard as more euphonious than the words telepathic rapport, with something or someone, though they know not what it is. Everything that they purport to register is regarded by them as of major importance. It is usually self-related and not due to their high point of spiritual unfoldment, which warrants their being the custodians of mysterious spiritual messages, usually of a most unimportant and platitudinous nature. There are many sources of these messages, and it might be useful if I here mention some of them. What I have to say may prove to be of value to the general occult public. 1. Messages emanating from the relatively nice, well-trained, subconscious nature of the recipient. These well up from the subconscious, but are regarded by the recipient as coming from an outside source. Introspective people frequently penetrate into the layer of subconscious recollection and are quite unaware of so doing. Their interest in themselves is so intense. Not knowing that they have done this, they regard what they find as unusual, beautiful, and important, and then proceed to formulate it into messages which they expect their friends and the general public to regard as spiritually based. These messages are normally innocuous, sometimes beautiful because they are a mixture of what the recipients have read and gathered from the mystical writing or have heard from Christian sources and the Bible. It is really the content of their right thinking along spiritual lines and can do no one any harm, but is of no true importance whatsoever. It accounts, however, for 85% of the so-called telepathic or inspired writings so prevalent at this time. 2. Impressions from the soul, which are translated into concepts and written down by the personality. The recipient is deeply impressed by the relatively high vibration which accompanies them, forgetting that the vibration of the soul is that of a master, for the soul is a master on its own plane. These are true soul impressions, but usually have in them nothing new or of major importance. They are, again, the result of past ages of soul development, as far as the personality is concerned. They are, therefore, that which an awakening personality has contributed to the soul of the good, the true, and the beautiful, plus that which has entered into the personality consciousness as a result of soul contact. This accounts for 8% of the writings and communications put before the general public by aspirants today. 3. Teachings given by a senior or more advanced disciple on the inner planes to a disciple under training or who has just been admitted into an ashram. These teachings bear the impress and conclusions of the senior disciple and are frequently of value. They may, and often do, contain information of which the recipient is totally unaware. The criterion here is that nothing, literally nothing, will concern the recipient, either spiritually or mentally, or in any other way connected with his personality, nor will they contain the platitudes of the religious background of the recipient. They will account for 5% of the teaching given, but this is in relation to the entire world, and the percentage does not refer to some one occult group, one religious faith, or one nation. The recognition of this is of vital importance. 4. Communications from a master to his disciple. This accounts for 2% of the entire telepathic receptivity demonstrated by humanity as a whole throughout the entire world. Western students would do well to remember that the subjective Eastern student is far more prone to telepathic receptivity than is his Western brother. This has a definite bearing on all the above classifications, which is somewhat humiliating for the Western mystic and occult student. The world scriptures emanate from another department of the second-rate teaching faculty. In this statement, I do not include the Old Testament, except such passages as the 23rd Psalm and certain passages out of the prophets, particularly the prophet Isaiah. The world scriptures were written for mystics occupied with beauty, comfort, and encouragement, and were not written for occultists. I would call this to your attention. In this section of the teaching, I am dealing with the nature and results of contact, of receptivity. I am giving no rules for individual development and would not if I could. Humanity today is developing receivers of every kind of concept, beginning with the lowest of them all, the masses of men who, through demagogues, the newspapers, the radio, books, and lectures, are conditioned by many minds according to their ray type of receptivity. As true intelligence develops, and as love begins to permeate human thinking, these conditioning factors will get increasingly less attractive. This means when the soul becomes of greater life importance, and man-made ideas, if such a phrase is permissible, of less importance. There are, in reality, no man-made ideas. There are only ideas as grasped by the intelligentsia, and then as stepped down by humanity's constant reaction to glamour, to emotional or astral conclusions, and to selfish interpretation. It must be remembered that the activity of all these impressing agencies is felt in a wide and general sense throughout the entire planet and the planetary aura. No kingdom in nature escapes this impact, and it is thus that the purpose of the Lord of the world is carried out. Being, coherence, and activity are thus blended into one created and creative whole. Life, quality, and appearance respond unitedly to the imposed intention of the planetary logos, and yet at the same time remain creatively free as regards their reaction to these contacted impressions. This reaction is necessarily dependent upon the type and quality of the mechanism which registers the impression. This mechanism has been developed by the life within the form throughout the creative period, and, as far as the time element has been involved, the indwelling entity in any kingdom in nature has been free, and the time has been long or short, and the reaction to impression has been rapid or slow, according to the will of the controlling life. In the mineral kingdom, this reaction is very slow, for inertia, or tamas, controls the spiritual life within the mineral form. In the vegetable kingdom, it is more rapid, and under the invocative appeal of the lives in that kingdom, the diva world is invoked and greatly aids and hastens the unfoldment of the vegetable consciousness. This is one reason for its relative sinlessness and extraordinary purity. The major impression registered in the second kingdom of nature emanates from the angel worlds and from the diva hierarchy. The angels and divas are to the vegetable kingdom what the spiritual hierarchy is to humanity. This is, of course, a mystery with which you have no concern. But impressions and reactions are to be found in both these kingdoms, and upon such response depends the evolution of the indwelling consciousness. The animal kingdom has a peculiar relation to the fourth kingdom in nature, and the unfolding of the animal consciousness proceeds along lines paralleling yet dissimilar to that of the human being who is beginning to respond to the kingdom of souls, the fifth kingdom. It is the karma and destiny of the fourth kingdom to be the impressing agent for the third. The problem is complicated, however, by the fact that the animal kingdom antedates the human, and had, therefore, generated a measure of karma, both good and evil, prior to the appearance of mankind. The impressing process carried forward by humanity is modified and often negated by two factors. 1. Human ignorance and selfishness, plus inability to work consciously and intelligently with the embryonic minds within animal forms. This is true except in a very few cases, which involve the domestic animals. When humanity is itself further advanced, its intelligent impression upon the consciousness of the animal kingdom will produce planetary results. At present, this is not so. It will only come when the animal kingdom, as a result of human understanding, becomes invocative. 2. The self-generated karma of the animal kingdom which is largely being worked off in its relation to mankind today. The karmic entity, holding a type of rule within the Third Kingdom, is a part of the planetary dweller on the threshold. You will note, therefore, the amazing planetary sequence of impression, all of it emanating from the highest possible sources, though stepped down and regulated to the receiving factors, all of it concerned to a greater or less degree, according to the quality of the mechanism of reception, with the will and purpose of Sanat Kumara, all of it during the eons achieving a group potency and a responding sensitivity. The main factor preventing a completely unimpeded sequence of impression from Shambhala straight down into the mineral kingdom via all the other kingdoms is the factor of free will resulting in karmic responsibility. This can be either good or bad. It is interesting to note here that both the good and the bad karma produce conditions which not only have to be worked out, but that they lead to conditions which delay what we, from our limited point of view, might look upon as the liberation of the planet. The generating of good karma necessitates the living through of conditions where everything, for the man responsible or for any other form within its limitations, is good, happy, beneficent, and useful. The evil karma generated in any kingdom in relation to the realm where dwelleth the planetary dweller on the threshold stands between the cosmic door of initiation and our planetary logos. This dweller represents all the mistakes and errors due to wrong reactions, unrecognized contacts, deliberate choices made in defiance of known good, and mass movements and mass activities which are temporarily not progressive in time and space. I realize that where these facts apply to the subhuman kingdoms in nature, you are not aware of what I mean, but that does not alter the law or movements which are in no way related to human evolution. In connection with the planetary logos, I would like to add that in that great planetary struggle and his subsequent initiation, we are all implicated, from the atom of substance up to and including all the lives which form the council chamber of the Lord of the World. It is this titanic effort which is made by the sum total of all the living processes and entities that compose the manifestation of Sanat Kumara, which is responsible for the creative evolutionary processes. It is also responsible for what we call time, with all that that concept involves of events, opportunity, the past, the present, and the future, the good and the evil. The dynamic impression which emanates from Shambhala reaches forth in great cycles and cyclic waves. These are impulsed from extraplanetary sources as demanded or invoked by the Lord of the World and his associates. They emanate in response to the acclaimed will of Sanat Kumara in the council chamber. This high spiritual and ultimate impression moves outward along the seven rays, viewing them as seven streams of spiritual energy, qualified and colored by the Shambhalic impression. This process repeats itself when hierarchical invocation is effective and successfully established. This again is repeated between the hierarchy and humanity in response to human invocation. This is becoming increasingly intelligent, potent, and evocative. The problem of the human kingdom is, however, very great. Humanity is the recipient of so many impacts, so many impressions, so many telepathic and mental currents, and so many qualified vibratory impressions from all the seven kingdoms in nature, that eons have elapsed in developing the adequate discriminative sensitivity and in establishing the certitude of the point in evolution from which conscious invocation must arise and upon which the evoked impression must be registered. Unconscious invocation proceeds all the time. When it becomes conscious, it becomes exceedingly powerful. The entire human family is today an amazing receiver of impressions owing to its myriad types of susceptible mechanisms. These impressionable instruments are capable of registering tamasic impressions coming from the subhuman kingdoms, particularly the third and the first. They record rajasic impressions coming from mental sources of all kinds. They are also, to a much less degree, responsive to sattvic or rhythmic impressions. their response to these high impressions and their registration of truth, light, and quality coming from the highest sources is, however, growing. It is because of this that the human kingdom, the great middle kingdom whose function it is to mediate between the higher and the lower, is the subject of much divine impression, conveying the purpose of Sanat Kumara. This you know. I have taught you much along this line in a treatise on the seven rays and also in the earlier treatise on cosmic fire. In these present instructions, I am dealing with group possibilities, with groups which can be trained to record, register, and be impressed by the hierarchy. Such a group can be in the position of being able to invoke the hierarchy with power, if it so choose. I am again bringing these things to your attention as aspirants and disciples, but from an angle different to those in my earlier writings. The responsibility of impressionability, of telepathic registration, and of invocative appeal is very great. Hence, what I have written here.